is Counterpoint. My name is Scott Harris. You're in WPKN in Bridgeport. Right now I'd like to introduce Jonathan Maines, legal fellow with the American Civil Liberties Union's National Security Project. During the first week of August, the American Civil Liberties Union and the Center for Constitutional Rights filed a lawsuit against the U.S. Treasury Department's Office of Foreign Assets Control, or OFAC, over the department's refusal to grant a license to the two groups that would allow them to file a lawsuit to challenge the U.S. government's authority to target U.S. citizens for assassination without charge, trial, or any due process. On August 4th, OFAC responded to the lawsuit by granting a license allowing the court challenge to proceed by the ACLU and Center for Constitutional Rights. Jonathan, thanks so much for joining us tonight to talk about this important topic. With that background, I wonder if you'd tell us, first of all, why was a license necessary to challenge the Obama administration's self-appointed authority to assassinate U.S. citizens that they suspect are engaged in terrorism?
Yeah, well, this is actually quite remarkable. We were in the course of preparing a lawsuit that would challenge the president's claimed authority to kill U.S. citizens away from, you know, the battlefield, based on secret standards, secret evidence. And, the only way to bring such a case to court is on behalf of a person who's on the targeted killing list, a citizen that is being targeted for death. And, we've been in touch with, a man named Nasser al-Awlaki, who's the father of Anwar al-Awlaki, the, radical cleric who has been reported to be on the list. And we were going to bring the lawsuit on behalf of his father, Nasser al-Awlaki, as the plaintiff. What happened then is that the Treasury Department, they designated him as a specially designated global terrorist. So that's a list which is intended to freeze the assets of certain people. It's sort of a counterterrorism financing regime. But what it also does is it makes it a crime for anybody in the United States to provide any kind of services, including legal services, to people on the list. Now, there's certain exceptions, but we didn't fall into any of those exceptions. So basically, we had to go to the government to ask for a license in order to bring a constitutional challenge, challenging the government's right to kill a U.S. citizen away from a battlefield. So we thought that was pretty remarkable, but, you know, the law was what it was, and we didn't want to risk criminal penalties. So we filed for the license, and the administration didn't respond for almost 2 weeks. Then we filed a lawsuit, and soon after that, they gave us a license.
Now, is this part of the anti-terrorism law that recently passed muster with the U.S. Supreme Court? Is this part of the same thing or a different law?
It's actually a separate law. I mean, the law was actually passed in 1977. It was originally intended to impose trade sanctions on specific countries, that sort of thing. After the 9/11 attacks, President Bush issued an executive order, you know, extending the reach of the law to combat terrorist threats. And so it's a similar provision. That I think the one they're thinking about is the material support statutes. This is similar, except that what this law is intended to do is to prevent you from transacting with people who are listed specially designated global terrorists is the term.
No, thanks for clearing that up. I was thinking of that material support for terrorism designation. But,
right.
Jonathan, tell us about why do you think the Obama administration now has publicly targeted a U.S. citizen, Mr. al-Awlaki, who is allegedly tied to the Christmas Day bombing with the airliner bound for Detroit, fortunately unsuccessful. But why have they even exceeded the Bush administration in denying due process to American citizens suspected of engagement in terrorism? The Bush administration put people in prison without trial, charge, or access to an attorney. Here, the Obama administration is targeting people for death.
It's a great question, and it's really not clear. I mean, you're absolutely right. This is another example of a situation where it appears that President Obama is entrenching and in some cases actually extending the sort of framework that was established by President Bush. So, you know, during the Bush administration, there was lots of concern, lots of outcry from many quarters about the Bush administration's claimed authority to detain people who are picked up anywhere in the world, including inside the United States, and put them in prison with charge or trial indefinitely. There's also concern about, you know, picking people up anywhere in the world and charging them and trying them in military commissions. These are all powers that are restricted to, you know, battlefield situations, circumstances where there's an actual war going on. Now, what President Obama has done is he's sort of run with this idea of the global battlefield, that the idea there being that rules that are intended to govern the conduct of a war can apply anywhere in the world that the government believes a suspect might be found. So it appears, we don't know, because the government hasn't actually set out its legal theory and still hasn't set out the criteria that it uses in deciding whether a U.S. citizen can be targeted for death. But it appears that they're taking the view that they can use quintessentially warlike means and warlike rules anywhere in the world, including in places like Yemen, where the United States isn't at war. So it's hard to say why they've decided to proceed as they have with so little transparency and with, you know, as far as we can tell, no due process. But there you have it.
We're speaking with Jonathan Maines, legal fellow with the American Civil Liberties Union's National Security Project, and we're talking about the Obama administration's stated authority that they can target U.S. citizens for assassination, as was the case with Anwar al-Awlaki, thought to be living in Yemen, and is tied in many ways to alleged terrorist plots, including the Christmas Day bombing that was unsuccessful. Jonathan, there are many people in this country certainly emotionally charged about the September 11th attacks and the believing the country should do everything possible to prevent future attacks, who are probably fully on board this idea of killing Awlaki in Yemen. How do you counter the idea that the Obama administration should afford any U.S. citizen, regardless of the charge or where they're living, with due process and forego this course they're on to assassinate this guy out in Yemen?
Well, you know, I think that, unfortunately, in the last several years, somehow the idea has become very sort of commonplace for people to think that the only way for us to be safe is to sacrifice bedrock civil liberties and constitutional rights that have served us well for generations. Now, we think that there's no contradiction. It's entirely possible to have a robust counterterrorism effort while still remaining within the limits that are set out by our Constitution and other sources of law. So what I would say to those that think there's no problem here is that I just point out how remarkable the assertive power that the president is claiming is. I mean, what we're talking about here is the power to put U.S. citizens on a list, which then authorizes the military and the CIA to hunt them and kill them anywhere in the world, even thousands of miles from any war zone or battlefield. And it's doing so without revealing to anybody outside of probably a small group of people in the administration what criteria will what criteria have to be met before a U.S. citizen can be hunted and killed, without any sense of what the process is that's in place within the administration, and certainly without any checks outside of the administration. So the idea that the president has a unilateral authority to set up the standards that will govern when a citizen can die, and then has the authority to, you know, be prosecutor, judge, and jury, and I suppose executioner, in applying those standards is quite remarkable. And I think that at the level of principle, most people can agree that that's not a power that we want to entrust to the unchecked executive branch.
Jonathan Maines, your lawsuit, correct me if I'm wrong, but your lawsuit may very well end up before the U.S. Supreme Court. Your challenge to the executive authority, the president, to assassinate a U.S. citizen without due process. What do we know about the Supreme Court's past decisions in this? We know that in the Yasser Hamdi case, by a lopsided majority, the Supreme Court actually denied that the executive branch has unchecked authority to designate somebody an enemy combatant and keep them in prison forever without trial, without charge or trial. Do you think the same opinion may hold sway in today's Supreme Court if this case came to them?
I hope so. I think you're right. I think the Supreme Court has, on four key occasions, they've heard cases involving the president's asserted authority in the post 9/11 era, and they have come out the right way. And you know, in that Hamby opinion referenced, then Justice O'Connor said that the authorization for use of force after 9/11 was not a blank check to the president. And we think that, you know, a court confronted with this issue, I think it'd be difficult for a court confronted with this issue to ignore it or to simply endorse unreviewed the president's asserted authority to set the standards by which citizens will be killed and then to go out and do that anywhere in the world. So we're talking about the most fundamental right, the right to life. And the Constitution is pretty clear that no person shall be deprived of life without due process of law. So we're hoping that by bringing this issue to the courts, the program and the asserted authority will be reviewed where it should be in a judicial forum.
Well, Jonathan, just a last quick question here for you, and that is with lives in the balance here, on both sides, people who could be killed, who are innocent, and not having gone through any kind of court trial or test of accusations. And on the other hand, people who say, we've got to kill these terrorists before they kill us. What would you have the government do instead of this lack of due process here in targeting Iwaki for assassination? Is there an alternative that you would recommend that you think is viable?
Sure. I mean, I want to be clear about one thing, which is that we're not saying that in all circumstances it's unlawful for the government to kill a citizen or otherwise a non-citizen. I mean, when a person, you know, it's familiar that in the domestic context, if a person poses an imminent threat to another person, and, you know, a law enforcement officer has no other way of preventing that threat but to use lethal force is permitted. You don't have to go to court to get a warrant. And so we think that where there's a genuinely imminent threat to life, and there really is no alternative means to prevent that genuinely imminent threat to life, then in those circumstances, those very narrow circumstances, it might be permissible to use lethal force. The problem here is that the president set up a program that uses lists, and a person's name ends up on the kill list and stays there for months at a time, and it's really hard to see how that kind of program could be limited to genuinely imminent threats. So, you know, we're not saying that the administration's hands are completely tied, even with respect to lethal force. Now, short of lethal force, there's many other options. You know, there obviously there's the possibility of capturing a person, partnering with, in this case, the Yemeni government to attempt to capture the person, trying to interdict plots in other ways. So I think the point, and it's, I think it should be fairly uncontroversial, is that lethal force should always be a last resort. And it seems like given the way that this program works, it may well not be.
And, of course, if you did capture this guy alive, he may be a lot more valuable in terms of giving a lot of information about the networks that exist around the country in Yemen and elsewhere than he would be as a corpse. So I don't know.
Absolutely. We haven't even talked about the sort of strategic implications of this program.
Right.
And it's not clear that it's the most effective strategy. I mean, you do lose a lot of intelligence. Also, if we endorse this as a precedent, other countries may well think that, you know, they have license to, you know, kill their suspected enemies anywhere in the world. And I don't know that that's a precedent we want to set, or one that in the long run will, you know, inure to the safety of the United States. So.
Yeah, I mean, you know, as with the Bush administration, certainly you can picture a country like Iran targeting its dissidents and people who maybe they accuse of triggering attacks against their government in Iran, you know, doing these assassinations outside their nation and citing the Obama administration as a precedent here, which it gets pretty horrible.
It's quite remarkable.
Yeah. All right, Mark, I appreciate you being here, and our listeners can find out more about this case by going to your website?
Absolutely. www.aclu.org/targetedkillings.
And I think ccr-nyc.org is the other group, Center for Constitutional Rights.
That's right. They're a co-counsel, the Center for Constitutional Rights, and that's ccrjustice.org.
ccrjustice.org, right. That's the other site. Mark, again, thanks for being with us tonight. Appreciate it.
Thanks very much. Appreciate it.
Bye-bye. Jonathan Maines, legal fellow with the American Civil Liberties Union National Security Project.